Today is the day we launch A Page from My Life. It's, I've never given birth, but I would imagine it's akin to that, in that, you know, this long gestation period, and then it's out there into the world, and you don't know what's going to happen. You can mind it and guide it along the way, but... So it's a very exciting day, particularly for the 150 people. Most of them, I think nearly all of them, have never been published before. So now, at some stage in the future, they'll be able to go into a bookshop, open up a book, and see their name and their 500 words in black and white. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that just amazing? And just to give you a flavour of how it's affecting people, Declan O'Connell has been on to us, and he probably puts it better than I did. He said, and so there it is, and there's a picture. There it is on the bookshelf, Bill Bryson on one side, John Grisham on the other. I was tempted to place the book between Joyce and Kavanagh, but that might have been pushing it a bit. Still, there we all are, 150 tiny droplets in the vast ocean of Irish literary history. Today, A Page from My Life will begin to populate bookshelves all over the country and beyond. It's humbling to think that total strangers might read your story, then maybe come back to it a second or a third time. Something in it might give them a reason to smile on a bad day, might recall an emotion from their own lives, might evoke a memory from their own past. Maybe, in 100 years' time, somebody might stumble across the book in a drawer and marvel at the power of this Darcy fella for gathering these literary titans together in one collaboration. Maybe none of that will happen, but it's nice to think of the possibilities in a year when nothing and anything has seemed possible. I just want again to thank the team for conceiving of this fabulous project, HarperCollins for the outstanding job they've done with the book, and express my delight at contributing in some small way to the magnificent Laura Lynn Foundation. It's been a blast. Declan O'Connell, page 67. And possible future owner of 0.667% of an Irish Book Award. Just read us the last paragraph then. Sure. So you'd hooked up with your ma outside of Bewley's on Grafton Street.
Yeah. We went in and sank into a big red booth. I'm gay, I announced before her coat was off. I know, she said. You might as well tell me your hair is a different colour. It doesn't make a difference. I love you. I love you as you are, as God made you. My heart exploded in gratitude and tears slid down my face. She held my hand and listened and listened and listened. Suddenly she jumped up. Oh my God, what time is it? We'll miss Mass. I couldn't bring myself to tell her my second secret, that I no longer went to church. Judging by her smile as we sat into the pews of St. Theresa's, though, I guessed she already knew.
And she knew you'd left the priesthood at that stage, or did she?
Oh, absolutely, yes. She did, yeah. She saw she'd come, my late sister, God rest her, she died very suddenly, but she always told the story of coming back after visiting me in Rome with my mother on the plane, and she was in convulsions of tears, and the Aer Lingus hostess said, "Are you all right, madam? Are you okay?" And my late sister turned to the hostess and said, "Well, what way would you be if you left your son behind in a mess in Rome, you know?" So she knew I wasn't happy in Rome.
Yes. You know. Stay with me, because as I was saying, we're trying to get as many voices in as we can. So we asked people to drop us little messages recorded on their mobile phones. So let's hear a few of those. Starting off with Vivian Hennessy. Come in, Vivian.
Happy launch day, everybody. This is Vivian Hennessy, and you can read my story on page 174. Congratulations to all the authors.
My name is Caroline Nolan, and I'm page 152. Cheers.
Joey, come in.
My name is Joey Stenson. You can find my story on page 13 of the wonderful book, A Page from My Life. I'd like to just ask the listeners to please get behind it now and buy a copy today and support the ever so important Laura Lynn Foundation.
Oh man, Joey.
I'm Samantha Long from Dublin, and my story, called Two in One, is on page 221 of A Page from My Life. Do buy an Irish book this lockdown. Cheers.
Aloha, Roisin here. You can read my story, called Hawaii, on page 178. So proud to be a part of this, and congratulations and thanks to all involved.
Hi, I'm Gail Cashin, page 200, inspired by my beautiful little daughter, Rose.
Bye-bye.
Ah, isn't that lovely? There you go. There are some of their fellow contributors.
David Ralph, Maria. My heart fluttered seeing the name flash on my phone. Kind of surprised to hear from you, I said, hoping my voice wasn't betraying me. We hadn't spoken in almost a year. I'll never forget it. Her last words before hanging up were, "Don't call again." Anger and disappointment and tears in her voice. "Just seeing if you're okay with this virus and all." I took to the hills. I'm home in Tipperary. I'm home in Sligo too. Got out of Dublin. Dublin. Our old life in Dublin. Our old house in Dublin. That night we spoke about the pandemic, how everything seemed suddenly more complex but simpler too, the strange sense of clarity amid the uncertainty. That night, in my boyhood bedroom, my mind raced. After many hard, long months, I felt I'd at last accepted things were over between us. I'd done as I was told. I hadn't called again. I hadn't texted. I hadn't anything. 2 days passed. 4, 6, finally a week. This time I called. We were careful to keep our talk on safe ground, keep it off the stupid things I'd done. The calls grew regular, as did those dreams I'd been having of her. The dreams that were so tantalizingly real when I'd wake, I'd expect to find her there in the bed beside me. The dreams were, as always, the good old days. I was surprised by how little seemed to have changed with her. "In the garden?" I asked one day. I dug out the raggedy old lawn, planted a new one with fescue grass seeds on top of the tons of fresh earth I'd rolled. "As you left it." "You didn't put the decking down?" I thought there'd be some crude, many-storied concrete monstrosity annexing my lovely grass by now. I'd had 1,000 thoughts. "No. And the shed?" "As I said, exactly as you left it." Visions from epic romances came to me as I lay in my room, as I walked the hills at home. Lovers separated by revolution, by war, by planetary upheavals, making their way to one another over mountain passes, across deserts, through thorn bush. "I'm back in Dublin," she told me another day. "We were calling all the time now." "Oh, since when?" "Last night." "How's things there?" "The garden is insane." "Really?" "There's so much growth, it's wild." I let out my breath. I heard myself say, "I could give you a hand with it." "Could you now?" she said in a teasing voice. "I could," I said quickly. "And how would you get here? There's checkpoints everywhere." I'd studied train schedules, bus schedules. I'd measured out the miles on foot from the station to the house. I had a whole alibi ready should I be stopped. "I'll find a way," I said. A pause during which the blood throbbed hot in my throat. Her voice was almost a whisper when she spoke next. She said, "Okay, so." I repeated, "Okay, so."
Someone tell the author what I really think of her, 'cause I'm afraid.
Okay, so, Rav, how are you?
Good, good, Ray, thanks.
Yeah, everybody wants to know, are you and Maria still together?
Yes.
So, do you reckon lockdown has brought people back together?
I think so, yeah. I mean, obviously that story is quite a personal story to me. But, I mean, I was aware of other people kind of contacting, you know, not just old boyfriends, girlfriends, partners, lovers and so on, but sort of reaching out to, you know, long-lost friends, people who might not have been in touch with for a while.
There was frivolous ones, there was huge sporting achievement, and then there were poignant ones like Josephine Harhan's 500 words on page 198 and 199. And Josephine's on the line. How are you doing, Josephine?
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Thanks so much for talking to us today. So your story is Mothers Doing Time.
Yes. It's about my son who's in prison, and the fact that all of us mothers are doing the time with them, and fathers and the girlfriends and everything else.
Yeah, it's a very moving piece. And, you know, you say it's not about those in prison, this particular story, but it's about all their loved ones, as you've mentioned. And it's keeping a face up, isn't it? And that must be a huge emotional drain on you.
But people forget that your son, they don't see him around. They might think he's away in Australia somewhere. They kind of forget that every day that you're kind of walking the same path as your child is. And I know a child is a big man now, but everybody's doing the same thing. And it really struck home to me, you know, when we got the video link, because we couldn't have the one-to-one visits with the prison, and then the video link didn't work. And I was so upset. That's what spurred me on to writing the piece.
Yeah, so how often do you get the video link now in lockdown?
Every 2 weeks for 15 minutes.
My word. Yeah. And how often would you have gone in to visit your son?
I would go as often as I was left. And, you know, it keeps him going and it keeps me going. And it's well worth doing. And, you know, he's a funny fella, so I'd have a great laugh with him.
Yeah. and you told him that you'd written the piece and you let him read it, and he's probably listening now today. What was his reaction when you read the piece to him?
So it's all good, ma'am. Everything we've seen is all good, ma'am.
Right.
Everything's all good. He, you know, whatever. I said, do you mind? Anyone that knows him in person, and the strangers don't matter. So that's it.
And was it breaking point when you were looking forward to the 15 minutes, and as you describe in the piece, you put on your best clothes and makeup and everything, and you're ready for your 15 minutes with your son, and then Wi-Fi let you down?
Yes, and it's because I think of him waiting. I can do other things. I can go around the house. I can do stuff. But he's cleaned up as well, and he would keep his best tracksuit for a visit. So yeah. He's showered and gotten ready. Maybe hasn't gone to the gym. It's a big part of his day.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he's really paranoid. He thinks that I'm going to die. He keeps telling me I'm 60.
Cheeky.
He keeps telling me I'm going to die. So then I know he's thinking, well, now there's something wrong at home and they're not telling me.
Right.
So then, of course, he rings then straight away to see is everything all right.
Yeah. Of course, I would imagine prison is punctuated by things like this, you know, a FaceTime call, a trip to the gym, meals, all of those things. And you need those things to get you through the day.
Well, you do. It gives your day structure.
Yeah.
And it's also good for their heads. But it is heartbreaking, Ray, to see, you know, I was in the prison recently, well, one of the last visits, and a young girl came in with a new baby to show the father of the child. It was his first opportunity to hold the child.
Mm.
And he was showing the baby to the other people in the room, because there's about six of us in this visiting area, showing it to the prison guard, so proud of his little boy.
Do you know what...
23:55. A decision to go to surgery. Minutes pass. Roles for transferred are assumed. Kiss your baby. A gentle order by the team lead. Never forgetting that parents are observing every last moment in the room. A kiss to the head. The pain is indescribable. A breeze flows through the ward. Every emergency door propped open. An eerie quiet lingers. Painful glances from the remaining mums and dads, having witnessed the fragility of life, holding themselves, their babies, their hopes and fears. Notes written, calls made, routines reassume. 18 tiny beating hearts completely unaware. Innate rituals of nursing continue. It's what we do, care and compassion, whatever the situation. We continue. 20 past midnight. For a moment, everything stops. In a sterile room, on another floor, a pause to consider every option has been thought of before the outcome is agreed. There's nothing more we can do. Everything has been tried. An overwhelming event for this little body. It's all too much. Rest now, little one. 1 hour of a 13-hour night shift. A shift I'm so privileged to be a part of. Some nights are remarkable for devastating reasons. 19 little heartbeats at the beginning of our shift. 18 at the end. A heartbreaking privilege to be a part of.
That was Laura Lynch, obviously a nurse.
My name is Patsy Lee, and at 75, I'm delighted to share the story of a childhood pet called Johnny on page 249. Enjoy this great book.
My name is Verena Cunningham, and set in the small town of Coothill in County Cavan almost 30 years ago is my little snapshot from my life. It features on page 84 of the book.
Hello, my name is Geraldine, and I'm on page 266. I couldn't imagine that someone would think my writing and my story would be good enough, and even to put it in a book. It's a great feeling, and thanks a million.
Hi, it's Aoife here, saying hello from page 3. Not that kind of page 3.
Go on, Aoife. What I can't get over is how brilliant people are at reading their own stories. Like, we rang them during the week, they were at home, and we said, okay, when you're ready. And they all did it in one take. Like Rosaline Dalton from page 97. Come in, Rosaline.
When the Chips Are Down by Rosaline Dalton. Chipper chips were always my favourite. On a day out to buy my communion dress, we stopped by a cafe and I, of course, ordered my treasure treat. While my grandmother had soup and my mother had a sandwich and tea. While they were chatting away, I decided to put some salt in my chips. Not paying attention, I accidentally poured sugar all over them. I was stunned and jumped from my seat, roaring and making a big fuss. I was very firmly told to sit down and be quiet. My grandmother, not wanting to waste the chips, started to blow the sugar off. I could see from where I was sitting that droplets from her mouth were dive-bombing onto my plate, not to mention that these droplets were living with the same pair of dentures for years. The same dentures that were thrown in the bin by mistake, only to be retrieved, washed and deposited straight back into their place of dwelling. Years of tea stains clung to every nook and cranny, such that most of their white colour had disappeared, making them appear like beach pebbles after the tide had gone out.
As the numbers went up, we thought, we're onto something here, we better publish a book. And we got four people involved to judge, so you can blame them if you're not in the book. So, Donald Ryan, good afternoon, Donald.
Hi, Ray. How
are you doing? We're running out of time. Eimear McLeisett is there as well, and Owen Colfer and Emily Pine. I'll go to you first, Donald. What was it like when you got your first book into your hand?
Oh, sure. I mean, it was just an unbelievable feeling. But I must say, Ray, it's a joy and a privilege to be just a very small part of this huge book. I don't think a book has ever brought so much happiness to so many people. And it's just so good. You know what? It's such quality, and it's a fantastic thing.
Ah, that's lovely. Eimear, oh, congratulations, Donal, on being nominated for an Irish Book Award.
Oh, thanks, Ray.
You were supposed to say congratulations back on that. No, I'm joking. I'm completely joking, Donal. I'm completely. How are you, Eimear? How are you?
Hi, Ray, and congratulations on the most amazing book.
So, complete Aisling back in the day. How long ago is it now? It's not too long ago. Is it 4 years ago?
2017 we had the first
only
book.
Only 3 years ago, wow.
Yeah.
So what was it like?
Oh, well, I was only thinking earlier, and I was talking to Sarah, who I write the books with earlier, and we were saying, I remember we thought our book was going to be out on a Friday, and on a Thursday afternoon, our friend Imogen sent us a picture of the book on the shelves in Dubray on Grafton Street. We nearly got sick. Like, we couldn't believe those people putting their hands on it and paying money for it. And I remember the staff in Dubray said there were mad women coming up going, my friend wrote that book.
My name is Olivia. Whilst I might sound refined, I once heckled an elderly poet in New York.
Look at you.
Who was just 1 foot from the grave. You can read all about it on page 11 on a page from my life. Cheers.
Cheers to you, Olivia.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best book you can buy this Christmas time. My name is John Gagan, and I feature on page 32 with a story called Photo. Cheers.
Cheers.
Maggie Burns here. I'm on page 272 and I'm thrilled to be part of this wonderful project. Congratulations to everyone. Thanks to the Ray D'Arcy Show for making it happen. And I hope it's a brilliant success for Laura Lynn. Cheers.
Cheers. Congratulations to you, Maggie.
I'm Emma Parishon. My story is called The Black Hole and it's on page 138. I just want to say a big cheers to Laura Lynn Children's Hospice for all their great work. Please buy a book and support a great cause.
On page 231, you'll meet me, Elaine Wilburn, as my 9-year-old self, trying to negotiate a high wall and a complicated friendship. I recommend reading it with a bowl of Kellogg's Frosties that you bought in Quinsworth.
There you go. That's it. Officially launched, A Page for My Life, available in all good bookshops and elsewhere. Thanks so much to Niamh and Mark and David who worked on the show today and Fiona upstairs and all our 150 contributors and everybody at HarperCollins and Penny and Rachel, who read the initial entries, and everybody who worked on the book. I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out here. And we're back as normal tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.